Can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacy, here with Sarah, and today we are talking about two films, A Wrinkle in Time and I, Tonya.
Mm-hmm. Which, actually, when you say it like that, kind of makes me laugh, because they're two very different movies.
Very. Very, very different.
Just so you know, there's no theme to today's show. We just chose them because... The one is currently in theaters. Are they both currently in theaters? No, or I, Tonya just came out on...
I, Tonya is out on DVD. A Wrinkle in Time was in theaters when I saw it, but I think is near the end of its run, maybe?
I think so.
Yes. But really wanted to see A Wrinkle in Time because of the cast. And we're going to start with A Wrinkle in Time.
Yes.
So I will just come right out and say, I read this book as a child and hated it.
How old of a child were you?
I was about 12 or so.
Okay, so about the right age. I did not read this book as a child, and because I totally judged a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. And my father's a librarian, so he would be very unhappy to hear me say that. But the book in our library had this like weird alien big-headed creature-y thing on it, and it freaked me out, and I wasn't really into science fiction at the time. And mm-hmm. so I was just like, no, I'm not going to read it. And then I finally read the whole series a few years ago, actually, as an adult. So I can't say what I would have thought of it as a child.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember I read the first one, and only the first one, because I didn't like it anywhere near enough to try and continue. And then there was a like made-for-TV movie about like 15 years ago or so. And I think I watched about the first like half hour, hoping that the movie version would somehow be better. And I don't remember much about it, except I didn't watch the rest of it. So clearly, I did not think that was the case. Mm-hmm. So going into this movie, I was iffy on it. I was like, okay, look, I know I don't like this story. And I've tried it a couple of different ways and didn't like it. But I was intrigued by the cast with Oprah and mm-hmm. Reese Witherspoon and Mindy Kaling.
Yes. Yes. Plus the... just the main family itself is very diverse with a mixed race couple and their mixed daughter, and then they adopt a little boy who is maybe Asian,
Asian or Latino. Or I couldn't tell.
Yeah,
either.
He's very cute, Charles Wallace. It doesn't matter what ethnicity he is. Right. It's just they're a lovely family in terms of their diversity.
Right.
And, you know,
yes.
They look like. Because we do have more families nowadays that mm-hmm. look like they look in the movie, and so it's nice to see that represented. And I loved that the cast was just so diverse overall.
I liked it too, except for one part, and I can tell that, you know, the diverse casting was definitely on purpose. Mm-hmm. But there's one part, the main girl's parents both work for NASA and they're astrophysicists or something, and they're giving a presentation to NASA. And the audience for that was immensely diverse, which, yes, I totally love that. But I'm like, that's not realistic. I'm sorry.
Right.
That I can't buy that because you got like really like unless you were giving this like in, you know, maybe the UN or like a council on African science or something. I was just like, there is no way that audience is as diverse as you made, which I'd love it to be. But that's not what's going on here. And it kind of took me out, which is interesting in this strange, very strange fantasy world that's what took me out of it.
Yes. So if you're unfamiliar with the movie or the book, it's a little hard to describe.
Very hard to describe.
Because the young woman who is the main character, her parents are both scientists, and The original book was in the 60s or 70s. I don't remember which. And so they've obviously updated some things for that. But her father is working on what he calls a tesseract, which is kind of creating a fold in space to enable you to travel incredible distances at very little time. So it's a little bit science fiction. It's a little bit fantasy because... Mm-hmm. Turns out a tesseract involves using your mind, which is science fiction, but also kind of verges on magic.
Right.
And he disappears in the movie, so it's just, what is the young woman's name?
Meg.
Thank you. Meg and Charles Wallace, her little brother, and their mom. And Meg is bullied at school, and she's just having a really rough time of it. And then things develop where they meet these three interesting characters, played by Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, and Mindy Kaling. The Mrs. What's it, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch.
Yes.
And they go on this adventure, and Charles Wallace, being six, understands things a lot better than Meg, who is having a lot of adolescent angst.
Right. And they're also accompanied by a friend from school, Calvin.
Yes, yes.
I gotta say, also, Tesseract also took me out of the movie, just because my first thought was, wait, when did we hop into a Marvel film? So I had to look up what a Tesseract was. Not sure it's, like, either this film or the Marvel films portray it as. It seemed to be, like, the fourth dimension of a cube or something.
Yes, and actually some of that is explained more in the book, which okay. You probably just blocked from your childhood.
Blocked so much of this.
Yes, but they also, so the three characters, the Mrs. characters, kind of represent the light. There's a lot of themes of light mm-hmm. and dark in this movie, and then the dark is just referred to as the It.
Yes.
Which kind of makes sense, and the It really does influence all of our darker characteristics. So they're yes. the things that make us doubt ourselves. The It is definitely that voice in your head that tells you you suck.
I mean, this film, unfortunately, doesn't help me understand the story any better. Like, when they can't be with the Mrs. when they're on the dark planet, so they have to go on their own. But then where's Charles Wallace? But then the children with the balls and the ladies, but then the guy on the beach. Like, there was a lot of just, like, what is going on here? And why, how did we get here? And why are we doing the things we do? Which I'm sure is, you know, explained probably in the book in, like, Meg's head. But when you're watching a movie, it doesn't really come across why they're doing a lot of what they're doing. Because mm-hmm. you don't have that inner monologue. So it's just like, what?
Well, I think the scene with the children and the balls, and to describe it for people who haven't seen the movie, it's a very... sort of Stepford Wives scene. Yes. You've got all these children standing in their driveways on a street, a typical kind of suburban street, and they're all bouncing the same ball at the exact same time. And then their mothers come out, they all have the same hair, and they all say, "Darling, come in for dinner," or something like that at the yeah. exact same time. And I think, if I'm remembering right, it's just representative of how this world is so far under the control of the It that everyone conforms to the same thing. There's no individuality, there's no... I don't remember exactly.
But, yeah, it was a lot.
And that nothing really is real in this world, per se.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I can't remember, and I'm pretty sure I'm just repressing the memory of trying to watch the TV movie version. But it could not have looked as good as this film does. Because just technologically, right. we've advanced so much in the past 15 years or so. This film does look pretty awesome, and clearly
it's beautiful,
the designers, particularly the costume and hair and makeup designers, were really told just sort of go for it.
Yes, especially with the Mrs.
The Mrs. looks so interesting, and they, like, every time they go to a different place, they have a costume change.
Mm-hmm. But even Meg's clothes change.
Well, that was another thing that frustrated me. Meg and Calvin are both wearing, like, three layers of, like, a jacket and a shirt and then a shirt under that, and those layers change with not so much continuity. So, right. like, Calvin at one point has his jacket, then doesn't have his jacket, then takes off his shirt and is running around in the shirt. And then when we see him later, totally has on both the outer shirt and the jacket. And I'm just like, what?
And yet Charles Wallace just remains in his little adorable sweater vest.
Right. Charles Wallace is a very interesting character. Like, he does. He has the sweater vest. He looks very prim and proper. He thinks way more than, I think, anyone. But there's also this scene where... The school Meg goes to is called James Baldwin Middle School, which I don't think was in the book, and this probably has something to do with Ava DuVernay, who was the director. But there's a scene where Charles Wallace is sitting outside the principal's office where Meg's been called into because she's in trouble, and he's sitting with his legs crossed, and right next to him is a picture of James Baldwin sitting exactly that same way with his legs crossed. And I'm like, I feel you're trying to tell me something here, and I'm only sort of getting it because I only know certain things about James Baldwin, but okay. But I thought that was very interesting. I was like, okay, that is giving me a definite sense of who Charles Wallace is right now.
Yes, and he's very precocious in the books. He's very, very, very intelligent. Mm-hmm. And then the book series, I mean, this isn't the book review podcast, but the book series goes on kind of like the Chronicles of Narnia, where you uh-huh. get some of the same characters, but then things change and it focuses on different characters during the different books, but kind of still battling the whole concept of the it and the darkness. Mm-hmm. So,
and I mean, I'm not the best with strange fantasy things of kids going off on strange adventures with no superstition. I have a problem with that with Miyazaki's films, where I'm just like, really, adults? Nobody has a problem with
superstition or supervision?
Supervision. Did I say superstition? Yes. Also that. But in this, they're joined by Calvin, who just comes across them when they're out walking their dog. Mm-hmm. And then Charles Wallace takes them to see Mrs. Who? Yes, who? I had to stop and think about which Mrs.
Yes,
that was.
Yes.
Calvin is very much like, oh, this is really strange, and this woman speaks in quotes, and then we wind up in this other world. Okay, cool. Yeah. He's very accepting. He very much goes along with it, but he's not an idiot.
No. He seems like an intelligent kid, but he's much more open than Meg is to yes. these new adventures that they're going on.
I would be much more with Meg of like, we can't do this, and that's exactly. not a real thing, and what are you doing?
Right. Yeah, no, I hear you. I would have been like, no.
Right. Yeah, we're just, not. What? We're not entessering as a verb. And there's a scene where Mrs. What's-It, played by Reese Witherspoon, turns into, and I really have no other way to describe this, than a giant kale stingray bird. It's really, really hard to describe if you haven't seen it. And I don't even remember this part in the book at all, so I'm not sure how correct that is or not. But she turns into this giant kale stingray bird thing and takes the kids on her back to go flying. And it's just like, why? You just immediately, like, and that's the one time you actually see Meg decide to be really adventurous. She pushes off to go to actually float in the air first, and I'm just like, there's no sides on this stingray thingy. You could easily fall off. What? What? And why do we change into it since we just come back? What? Like, there's a lot, because again, it's a fantasy film, so there's the whole thing about the it, which has its own planet or whatever, Cosmo. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it's called.
Yes. Something with a K that I can't also remember.
Right. And they keep going to different planets trying to retrace the path that Meg's dad took so they can find him. And it's just like, okay, fine, I get we're on a different planet and then a different planet and then a different planet. So each of the planets are different, but it feels very out there at times. And it's just like, say for Meg, we're all a little way too calm about this. I get the missuses are from here, so fine. And Charles Wallace shows no problem with anything the missuses do. Misses, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know the plural of misses. I had to stop and think about that at the end of the movie. It's Mrs. whatever's. But it was just like, what is with this place and these people who, you know, even though the missuses all have, you know, rather wild makeup and hair, no one doesn't look human.
Right.
Everyone's human. It's not strange fantasy creatures. They're all
right.
humans or taking human form. So it's just like, it's...
Except when they're a giant kale stingray bird thingy.
Except for that. But and the flowers that talk color
yes.
when we're at the giant kale stingray bird place.
Yes.
But except for that, like when they go to a different planet and they meet Zach Galifianakis has a character in here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to a different place and they have Oscar Pena, who is in here. Mm-hmm. And all the
some
people...
very weird facial hair.
Yes.
No, that was the last episode. I was going to say that could be our theme, but then we talked about the mustache from the last, you know, in our last episode.
Right.
Hercule Poirot.
Yeah. So, there was a lot of weirdness going on in this film that I just couldn't quite wrap my head around, even with the story. But I think even with all that weirdness, the performances were really good, I thought.
They were. And I don't know, the weirdness didn't really bug me. I just kind of went with it. Maybe because it was so visually stunning, but mm-hmm. I loved that in the end it was all about love, and especially loving yourself. And yes. Meg really has to learn some things about loving and forgiving herself and loving and forgiving others. And there's a lot. And that, you know, goes with the light and dark themes. Mm-hmm. But all you need is love. The Beatles were right.
I don't know. I mean, the Beatles were also kind of weird, too. So,
well, yeah.
So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will be talking about I, Tonya, which one of us have seen and one of us haven't. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back. You're listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast. And today, we're not really having themes, save that female roles, I guess, and
maybe
parents.
You know, they're both movies.
Troubled relationships. And movies, yes, but also troubled relationships with parents. So earlier we discussed A Wrinkle in Time, and now we're discussing I, Tonya, which I have seen.
And which I, unfortunately, was unable to see before today. I tried really hard, I promise you. I will say that when I first heard about this movie, I assumed, and you know mm-hmm. what they say about assuming, that it was a Lifetime movie.
Okay,
no,
I get
it was
that.
In theaters.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I couldn't believe, and I thought, Margot Robbie is doing a Lifetime movie?
Right.
And then I realized it was in theaters and I went, wow.
Yeah.
Because I was a teenager when the real I, Tonya happened, and I remember the drama of it. Mm-hmm.
So you're at least covered, because I was very young and I don't actually remember that. I only know things I saw from film later
mm-hmm.
and documentaries. But when I the only thing I knew about this was it was about Tonya Harding, who's mm-hmm. famous for the whole Nancy Kerrigan thing, and that it had Allison Janney playing her mother.
Oh, I love Allison Janney.
I did not even know who was playing Tonya Harding going into this. I only knew about Allison
Janney.
Between
the two of us, we knew who... We
knew a good amount of the movie between us. But,
so for those of you who maybe don't know the movie or you don't know the
story,
so Winter Olympics, there were two, you know, you always get those lovely stories, and, mm-hmm. and Nancy Kerrigan was favored to win, but Tonya Harding was another female figure skater. And her story, so Tonya Harding was kind of that girl next door, popular.
No, she was white trash.
Not Tonya Harding. Thank you, Nancy Kerrigan. Whereas Tonya Harding really, I think, did grow up in a trailer. Mm-hmm. And people called her white trash. And she had a different story, which that could have been a really great kind of, you know, she came up from this difficult right. childhood and she made it to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
But then Nancy Kerrigan was attacked by someone with a bat. And there was a whole drama. It turned out that it was in connection with Tonya Harding, and it just went from there.
And it was a crazy, crazy drama around the time when we were starting to really get all the 24-hour news cycles. So mm-hmm. this kept getting played over and over and over again. You could not escape
yes,
this going into the Winter Olympics.
And Nancy Kerrigan, the whole aftermath, she's obviously lying on the ground. You know, they took out her knee with a mm-hmm. bat, and she's yelling why, which is understandable. But that got played so many times.
Much, yes.
And it kind of, people started kind of making fun of it. It got played so much.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about this, because I knew going into it, okay, it's Tonya Harding, so it's got to be about Nancy Kerrigan. Nancy Kerrigan, the whole Nancy Kerrigan thing doesn't really show up too much. And in fact, I don't even know the actress who played Nancy Kerrigan's name. And I'm not even sure if she actually has lines in this film.
Wow.
Because it's more about Tanya and her relationships with her mother and also her ex-husband who was involved in the whole hitting of Nancy Kerrigan situation.
And you know, that does make sense for a movie because the relationship with Nancy Kerrigan was so publicized, you know, mm-hmm. that happened. So I can see where you'd want to make a movie about kind of the backstory and how she got to where she got.
Because everyone thinks they know the Nancy Kerrigan story, but anything beyond that, they really don't know.
Yes.
So going into this, as I said, I only knew Allison Janney played her mother. And I will say Allison Janney plays her mother stupendously. This role was evidently written for her by the screenwriter, Stephen Rogers. And I think she totally and completely earns, like, her Oscar and her Screen Actors Guild Award and her Critics' Choice and her BAFTA. Like, she earned every award that she earned for this role, and she earned a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
But she also said it was her most challenging role of her career, which I can understand because Tanya Harding's mother in this film is terrible. It's just a horrible, horrible human being.
Oh, wow.
To the point where you kind of... You almost don't believe that Tanya Harding could have been a figure skater because it's like, how on earth did this really, really terrible woman decide, let me take my child to figure skating lessons?
And figure skating is, you know, like any sport or any athlete that makes it to the Olympics, it's a huge commitment of both time and money, and you need a good support system. So often you get kind of terrible parents in terms of like the way they push
their kids.
Stage
mothery, almost, yes.
But yeah, I don't know how Tanya Harding actually made it as far as she did with a mother like that.
Well, and it comes up several times in the film that her mother doesn't really have an education and works as a waitress, and then Tanya Harding herself doesn't have an education and works as a waitress. So even for them, paying for the lessons would have been even harder when, you know, you're very poor, you're possibly living in a trailer, you know, to pay for these lessons of what was considered a almost a princessy sport. Like, that was part mm-hmm. of the drama between Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan, was Nancy Kerrigan fit the stereotype of, you know, being somewhat well off and almost looking like a ballerina on ice, mm-hmm. and Tanya Harding most definitely did not in any way.
No, and I remember at one point she came up, this was after all the drama had happened, and she came out to skate and she started to skate and then she stopped and she went over to the judges where the judges were sitting and her lace broke or something, but she was just, you know, she was crying and she's like, my lace broke. It always felt like nothing was her fault. Like, she was always placing the blame on other people. That's the way they portrayed it in the media, at least a lot of the time.
Well, that's the way they portrayed it in the movie too, mm-hmm. because she actually does say that many times. It's and we should really talk about the way this movie's set up. It's set up sort of mockumentary style almost. Mm. So there are interviews being given with the actors playing Tanya Harding and her husband and her mother, but then we're seeing, you know, the events play out as if they're happening right now. Mm-hmm. And then we cut back to these interviews. But then it also does a strange thing where for some odd reason in the middle of the actual events happening, characters will break the fourth wall and talk to the audience, which wouldn't throw me off except for the fact that we already have this thing about interviews, mm-hmm. so you could just do it then. But beyond that, I think it's also interesting. This film is rated R and definitely earns that R rating. There are a number of F-bombs from pretty much everyone except for her coach, who being her ice skating coach is, you know, already well a part of this world, this fancy world. Where at one point she's talking to her mother about how Tanya, who's like 7 or 8 or whatever, needs a fur coat because all the other girls have fur coats and Tanya needs to fit in because that's what part of the sport is about, fitting in. So,
oh my gosh,
that scene's actually great because they're, you know, very poor and whatever. You see her, you saw her earlier hunting, and later she comes in with this fur coat that is made out of rabbit skins.
Oh,
and one of the girls who has the nice pristine fur coat is like, what kind of fur coat is that? And Tanya at 7 or 8 or whatever this is just flips her off.
Oh jeez.
And they all cuss up a storm. Like, I don't drink that much, but if you wanted to play a drinking game with this film with just the F word, you would most definitely be drunk by the end. Like, it is amazing. The amount
Not
of
that we're advocating drinking
don't,
games,
no.
And, you know, but
if you were,
we mentioned it before, you know, so Well, no, you know, we didn't specify what you should drink.
We should play a drinking game with soda. It's fine.
Iced tea.
But this film is, it's done in that mockumentary style, and it's also sort of a black comedy, given the fact that, you know, Nancy Kerrigan was attacked with, it's actually a retractable baton in the film.
Yeah, okay.
So there's some lines in this that are amazing and how amazingly horrible they are.
Yes.
So at one point, her mother is talking to her about Jeff, who goes on to be her husband later and is involved in the attack on Nancy Kerrigan. Mm-hmm. And it's after, maybe not the first time he hit her, but he starts hitting her pretty early on. And Tanya actually says, or in the movie at least says, she doesn't like it, but she thinks it's normal because that's where she came from. Her mother hit her, and her mother hit her father, her one of like five husbands or something, I think she says. Mm-hmm. So to her, that was normal. So when he starts hitting her, she doesn't really think anything's strange about that.
Oh, that's just sad.
So at one point, her mother remarks that she can see that she's got a bruise even though she's got makeup on. And then she says, and I'm quoting this, so apologize for my language, "You're a dumb piece of shit who thinks she should get hit. Maybe he should hit you so you learn to keep your dumb mouth shut. I'm supportive of this relationship." Now, in between there, Tanya's saying things, but it's basically like, thanks, Mom.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I can see why Alice and Janney would have had a hard time with this role.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Her character is, and she's not apologetic at all, her mother in this film. Mm-hmm. She is exactly who she is. There's a lot of times where she's either smoking or drinking, even when, you know, she's watching her, like, 8-year-old practice. She is drinking while sitting near all the other ICE parents. Right. Because that's a good model.
Do they talk about how Tonya Harding actually got into ice skating? I mean, this just doesn't seem like any kind of supportive relationship that would have gotten her anywhere in ice skating. You know, maybe one lesson at a local rink, but how in the heck did she make it to the Olympics?
So what it is Alice and Janney first takes her to ice skating lessons because she says she talks about ice skating all the time. She won't shut up about ice skating. So I could just either, you know, sit around and listen to her talk or take her to ice skating so she'll shut up about it. And at first the coach doesn't want to take her because she's like 3 or 4. Like, she's very young, much younger than all the other girls, and the coach thinks she's too young and that she says she doesn't take girls that young. But then the mother just tells Tanya to go skate, and the coach happens to see her and decides to take her on. And then 6 months later, Tanya wins her first competition, beating girls who were, you know, several years older.
Wow.
And then getting to the Olympics, one of the things Tanya Harding was famous for at the time was she was the only woman who could do, I believe it's a triple axel. Mm-hmm. None of the other women would even attempt that. Right. So, and that was part of, I think, why she had such a hard time with the skating, and this comes up several times, is she doesn't fit the ideal, but she's also, you know, very powerful. She's not pretty and graceful. She's very powerful and very almost rock and roll. Like, there's one time where she goes out to skate, and I have no idea whether or not this is the music she actually skates to, mm-hmm. but it is a definite rock song playing, and she rocks out to it. Mm-hmm. It works well, but it's not, you know, the beautiful
right
ballet on skates that you generally saw at the time.
Yeah, and at that time, there was much less of the more contemporary music. You know, you still can't have anything with lyrics in.
Changed that. For the past Olympics.
That's right, yes. But even then, even if you had something that was more contemporary, then it didn't have lyrics. And mostly it was a lot of classical and a lot of,
right.
You know, those types of things. So this movie, this story just actually kind of makes me sad.
Yes.
She could have had such an amazing story had she had any support somewhere.
Well, and you get the thing, because she does say several times, you know, it's not my fault. Whatever this thing happened, it's not my fault. And, you know, at some point it's like, well, you kind of had a choice there. But on the other hand, she's kind of right. Because in the film, at one point, she actually follows a judge after a competition to ask him why she's not getting the score she thinks she deserves, even though she's like landing all her jumps. Mm-hmm. And the judge is like, okay, if you say I told you this, I'll completely deny it. But you don't fit the image we want to send to the Olympics of the wholesome American family.
Right.
And she's like, well, I don't have a wholesome American family. Why can't it just be about the skating?
Right.
Because technically, she was really good. But she just was not what they thought a figure skater should look like or be like. And she did get penalized for that in the judging.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of a
tragic story all around.
Well, and then at the end, it's even more heartbreaking at the end, because she says at the end, I was loved, then hated, then just a punchline. Mm-hmm. And when you get to at the end, there's a scene where Jeff is either on his way to prison or just got out of prison. And he's eating breakfast and he's looking out his window where there have been media trucks for weeks and weeks after the Nancy Kerrigan attack, you know, trying to get a statement or whatever. And the last of the media trucks is picking up to leave. And on the TV, you see footage of O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
And you can clearly see the statement that's being made there of, oh, okay, now we're on to the next big story.
Right.
Like, even with Tonya Harding, who was, for the Nancy Kerrigan thing, evidently banned for life from skating.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, congrats, this, you were, you know, you're 15 minutes of fame, which maybe was a few weeks, and now this is over and we don't care about you.
Yeah.
Like, even though we were absolutely horrible to you at this time, we're not going to do anything lasting with that.
Yes. And it was, you know, very easy to make her a punchline at the time because she was that, you know, she didn't fit the mold. She wasn't this well-spoken young woman, you know, that kind of princessy figure skating persona.
Yeah. And I mean, at the time she was maybe, I think, 23 or 24 when this all went down. Mm-hmm. Had been married, had been divorced, had grown up in an abusive home and then been in an abusive marriage.
Mm-hmm.
All of this, you know, before the age of 25. And then at the end of that, she can't even do the one thing that gave her joy. She's been banned from it for life. She doesn't have an education. She doesn't really have a way to earn her living.
Mm-hmm. Did the movie address anything? I mean, I should look into this. Has she made any statements about the movie? Was she involved in it at all?
So according to the thing at the beginning of the movie, the interviews in the movie are based off of real interviews,
mm-hmm.
That were given unironically, which when you hear what they're saying, you can understand why they made a point to say unironically.
Okay.
Because some of the things they're saying, it's just like, were you serious? Like that, especially, it's quite actually amazing that even the whole thing happened, because Jeff and his friend Sean and then the two people they hired to do it were all rather idiotic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a person playing a reporter in this film sort of standing in for all the reporters, and he says at one point that the two people who ended up doing the act are two of the biggest boobs in a story populated solely by boobs. And you really do get that. It's like, how did this even occur? Mm-hmm. You're all idiotic.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, it does have actual real footage. Mm. Of her and her mother, which is from an interview. So the interview is set up to be Allison Janney is dressed the exact same way this woman is in this real footage of the interview, and the real interview that Sean, who was Jeff's friend and who helped set up the crime, gave. He's the one thing. His interviews are done interesting in this film because the real person is actually dead.
Mm.
So they set it up like we're just watching old taped interviews because obviously we can't have real ones. And
okay.
Then it gives you the little the screen. It tells you at the end where they all are, you know.
Okay.
That she hasn't talked to her mother since, and she ended up doing boxing for a while, and then she now does, I think, building decks or something.
Hmm.
So it she's married and she has kids, so somewhat happy ending, you hope?
I hope so. I mean, it was drama at the time and she didn't necessarily help herself, but
she really didn't.
Like, I don't know, everyone deserves a little bit of a happy ending, I think.
Yes. Well, on that note, the not quite happy ending, we're gonna end it here for today. Thanks for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
As a reminder, you can find all of our podcasts at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download those podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, really anywhere that you find anywhere you listen to podcasts, any app that you use on your mobile device, you can find the GSMC Podcast family of podcasts. And you can follow us on social media, Facebook and Twitter. We would love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us.